Welcome to Teacher Tales Podcast, where classroom chaos meets heartwarming moments. Get ready for stories that make teaching truly unforgettable. Let's dive in. Welcome to
Teacher Tales.
All right, I'm here today with Greg Hicks. I've known Greg a long time. He's a retired administrator in Huntsville City, from Huntsville City. Don't really remember when I met him. I just remember he's been a great friend and somebody who has been a real Francis Underwood to my real Doug Stamper. You'd have to have watched the House of Cards to get that reference. Mr. Hooks, welcome to the podcast, and take a few minutes and tell us about yourself, how you got into education, and the journey for you personally.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for having me. As you said, Glenn, we've been known each other forever. I don't really remember where we met, but I do know it was great and have a long-lasting and fantastic friendship. I got into education about 32 years ago, maybe 34 years ago now, was coaching and teaching social studies at Chapman Middle School way back when, and absolutely loved it. It was one of those jobs where, you know, they say if you do something you love, you never work a day in your life. That's not exactly true, but I did.
Anybody that says that needs to go spend a week or so at Chapman.
It's a lot of great memories, though, but I was a teacher, a coach. I went to be a high school teacher and coach, assistant principal, athletic director for the district, went back and became a principal of Columbia
High. When you were the AD for Huntsville City, I think when I was working at Chapman for the majority of that time. And then you went back. Where were you the principal at the end of?
After I became AD, I left there for about 4 years and went to be principal at Whitesburg Middle School.
That's right.
Then I was principal of Columbia High School. And then I went to the district for, was the director of behavioral learning. Then I went to talent management at the district level. And then I finished my career as principal of Huntsville Junior High. So had a fantastic career, was all over the city, met a number of different people, fantastic people, relationships, and now what I'm doing as I retired, about 4 years now that I retired, 3 or 4 years since I retired, I work on contract with the district as a principal mentor. And young principals, they'll have me come and work with them. I'm also working with the Alabama School of Cyber Technology and Engineering as a internship supervisor for their kids who go out and go to the various businesses and programs in the city and work with them. So keeping busy, doing well.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's never.
So go back to the very beginning of your career. You think about the people that influenced you. What prompted you personally to get into education, and who were some of those folks that, gave you the desire to become a teacher? And talk about that.
Well, you know, it goes way back. I look back at my life. The most influential people in my life, other than my parents, were always my teachers, and especially my coaches. I was going back to school, and my mother-in-law actually said to me, "said you know, you are great with kids. You really have a calling and a ministry to work with these children." Because I had talked to certain kids in the community and kind of mentored them and helped them, and she thought that I'd be fantastic for that. And I said, "You know what? I'm gonna give that a shot," and got with a couple of my former coaches who said, "You would be fantastic at this," and gave it a shot, got in, and never looked back. I love talking to kids, and I love trying to motivate kids and see what makes them tick, because I always look back to my mentors who had to help me, and got me out of a mindset that I didn't know where I was going, getting lost and all that kind of thing. And it kind of directed me into a way that was just really, really good, Glenn. I don't know how to explain it, but it just kind of clicked. And I could just kind of talk to people. I think that
it's, you know, in my opinion, teaching's a calling. And much like, you know, pastors, ministers, and, you know, and if you're doing that, it is like you're not really working it. You're doing what you're supposed to do. It's just, I always was told get out of the car and do the best you can where you're at. And then, you know, when you get where you can't do that anymore, then you know it's time to go on.
Right, right. Exactly. And it was some of the kids that, I don't know, it was very difficult to reach. I would just sit and talk to them. And that's a lot of times the only thing kids really want is somebody who they know is really going to listen to them.
And it's not an easy job, but it's absolutely fulfilling.
Yes, no doubt about it. And that old adage, that kids don't care how much you know until they know how much you care, that is real. Dr. Todd Whitaker always taught us in all of his books, it's all about relationships. It's all about relationships, and everything matters. Everything matters. Everything you say, you don't know what you might say right now that really is going to affect someone for the rest of their life, especially in the situations that we're in. So everything that you do matters. Everything that you say, everything that you personify, everything that you represent, it matters.
Well, again, thank you for being here. I'm going to run through some questions. I want, you know, to pick your brain a little bit. Looking back, what's the most memorable moment in your career as an administrator? And then how did that shape your leadership style?
Okay. First of all, let me back up a little bit. All these questions, is there going to be any math?
No, absolutely not. No.
Well,
and not even in the English. Nobody's going to be grading your English or grammar either.
Oh, man.
No spelling test, nothing like that.
Okay, man. I'm going to enjoy this immensely, I tell you. So with that question, as I said, you know, everything matters. And the reason I say that is because I'll see kids now that are grown, and they'll come to me and they'll say, Mr. Hicks or Coach Hicks, you don't know this, but you were the reason that I came to school every day. No, I think you came to school every day because
so that's why the attendance at all those schools was so poor.
If you look, you know, I look back at it, it was always funny to me that some of the most challenging kids that you had in the building were never absent.
Unless that's right.
Into them.
Yes.
Well, school was the best thing for them every single day, you know.
And then they would try to come back for a ball game or something like that every time.
Exactly. They said, you're not supposed to be here. I said, no, my suspension was over at 3 o'clock, Mr. Hicks. I was like,
no. My respite doesn't end till tomorrow.
Exactly right. But they would say things to me like, you know, no one really believed in me, but you did. You said that I could do thus and so, or you encouraged me and you never looked down on me. I had one kid one time who I was assistant principal, and he had gotten in trouble, and he was a frequent flyer. And he would come in and he would say, Mr. Hicks, I don't know why you're talking to me. Just give me my suspension and let me go. You know, because I'd always talk to him, see what was going on, why they were doing certain things. And he said, listen, I'm no good. You know, I just get in trouble all the time, this and that, this and that. And they were talking about drugs and things like that. And I said, I just looked at him and I said, I'm not looking down on you. No one should look down on you because I don't know where you've been and you don't know where I've been. I said, and just because you might sin differently than I do does not mean that I need to look down on you. And he was just looking at me, and he said, "But Mr. Hicks, you know, I've done drugs before and all this kind of thing." And I said, "Well, I'll eat every piece of fried chicken that you put on the plate in there. And that's a gluttony. I'm killing myself." And he just kind of looked at me like, "I talk about it like that." And I said, "Yeah." So I have no reason to look down on you. And that kind of changed his perspective and changed the way that he kind of viewed coming to my office. And a lot of times it was kind of weird because some of the kids would want to come to my office. And I said, "Now, listen, now, we can see each other in the hallway, but don't do anything to come see me now. Yeah. I'll gladly come and visit you when I get a chance to." But it was things like that. And you never know what motivates kids and what's what changes kids' mindset. Because sometimes these kids look at teachers or people in authority as the enemy. And you just have to change that mindset. I'm here to help you. You win, I win. You know, you lose, I lose. This is my job. I don't get, you know, I don't clock out at the end of the day and go home and get paid and forget about you guys. I have a vested interest. And I think that, and this might be my little bias, but I think that coaches do that very, very well.
Successful to do. I mean, you know, that would be the goal for all of them too, but the successful ones bring things out of kids that just, I mean, that's, they get them to play at their highest level and do things that, and that's one of the things that attracted me to coaching. You know, I wasn't a very good coach. At least I didn't feel like I did, but now I still run into guys that played soccer for me back 2005. And when we were struggling, I mean, we went 0-19 that year, and they said, "That was the best years of my life." What? So we did play in the playoffs, you know, it got better, but they just remember the struggle and being there for it.
Right. And not beating them down in the dirt and being there with them together.
Yeah, none of us know anything about soccer. We were just out there for fun.
Yeah, just being a part. And coach, one of the greatest parts of my life, it was, you know, we would pray before, you know, before the games. And a lot of times, you know, it was during the time where I couldn't pray. But if the kids wanted to, they could. And there was one particular time kid was praying. And at the end of the prayer, he said, "And may the best team win," right?
No. That's good stuff.
Yeah. I never forgot that. That was always funny. Made me laugh.
So if you could give your younger administrator self one piece of advice, what would it be and why would you recommend that? And you're kind of in a different place in that you have a child that's in administration, so you've probably given that advice from time to time.
I absolutely have. And I told my daughter, who's an administrator now in high school, balance. Make sure you balance your time for your family and make sure you balance your time for your own health. I remember that when I first got into administration, that was the very first time or the beginnings of starting having to have health problems, hypertension, diabetes, things of that nature, which I brought on myself, but I did not take the time to intentionally deal with those things because I was too busy doing other things and really kind of neglecting those things. Like, as an administrator, you ate when you could and you skipped a lot of meals and you had long hours, and I really didn't take care of myself like I really should have. And if I could tell my younger self that, that would be one of the main things I do. Because if you balance your health, balance your time, spend time with your family, that type of thing, and not go overboard. I missed a lot with my family and with myself back there at that time.
My dad, I used to call when I was at Chapman, and I would call him on my way home. He lived in another state, and I would call him on my way home, and he would say, "You just now leaving the office?" And I'd say, "Yeah." You know, he was a Methodist minister for several years, Pentecostal minister before that, and he said, "You know, son," he said, and I bet he said it 1,000 times. He said, "Son, you know, in my line of work," he said, I've visited a lot of deathbeds," and he said, "I've not one time been to a by somebody's side that was about to pass, and they said, 'Man, I wish I could have spent one more hour at the office.'" But every one of them say, you know, "Man, I'd give anything to spend one more hour with my family."
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, my dad kind of had my warped sense of humor. And so fast forward, I got to be with him when he passed. And so, Lord, had been sitting with him probably 5 days. His mind was sharp as it could be, but his body was just going, you know, was leaving him. And he rolled over there and he said, "Hey, son, I'd give anything to spend one more hour in the office." He said, "You're getting on my nerves." I got tickled, and he got so tickled he set off all of his alarms and the beeps, and nurses came in there, and I had to tell him what had just happened. Anyway, it was, you know, it's just my way dad would, that's the way he handled things.
Right.
I'd give anything to be one more hour at the office. But you are exactly right. And many times, and I did a terrible job of it myself, you know, between, you know, just learning how to strike that, and there is no perfect balance, but just, you've got to be intentional about. There was some training that Huntsville City did that we, you know, I don't remember the guy's name, but I remember he had that little bell, and he rang the bell, and to get our attention. I thought that was the corniest thing, but I still remember that little triangle he had that he would ding. But he talked about, you know, using, treating your family time like a doctor's appointment. And if you have a doctor's appointment, you're going to make that doctor's appointment. If you have a doctor's appointment at 4 o'clock, you're going to do whatever it takes to get out of that office and make that appointment. And I thought that was pretty good, strategy to set yourself up to get out of the office, is just put it on your calendar and make it like an appointment that you got to get done.
And I think I remember that. And there was another guy. He said, and it was very strange to me, he said, "Do not make your office like your home."
Yeah, this same guy.
Same guy.
Pentecost. His name was Pentecost. I remembered his name now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember who prompted that training. I just remember that, you know, us and our secretary had to come and it, talking about how to get yourself organized so that you could get out of the office. And that was some of those days where I was 20-hour days. I mean, it was awful.
Absolutely.
And just to get it done.
Yeah, because the pressure that are under is just unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
You have to be intentional about it, Sarah.
So, next question is, what was the most challenging situation you faced as an administrator, and how did you handle it?
Okay. There were several. There were several, but by far the situation with COVID was
it was
out of this world.
Every
moment of every single day was new territory.
None of us knew what to do.
No. And not only did none of us know what to do, they couldn't tell us what to do. No one knew what to tell us to do. I remember when we were in the building, and if someone got sick, we had to backtrack, and the nurses had to identify everyone who had been around that person.
And you think back about it, and we did it, but golly, I mean, you think back and you go, "Well, that was stupid." You know,
you had to go through this person's entire schedule, and the teachers had to have a seating chart.
Yeah.
That person.
I remember when during those guidelines, I would say, you know, you could absolutely tell that somebody who had never worked in a school made those rules.
I
never worked in a high school. Now that, you know, you could probably do that in elementary school and get away with it. But these kids would interact with, I mean, right. We had a student in our school that got COVID, or that called us with a positive test for COVID. They would, you know, went to the doctor, called us back. Nurse that comes and says, "Hey, I need to track this kid down." 145 kids in two class periods.
Yeah.
I said, "No, we are just, I only had 1,000 kids in my school." So we get to tracking it. So it winds up being 500 kids. So we're just going to do the whole, we're just going to make a school-wide school cast. And I just made that school cast call every day for about 2 weeks. We, you know, a kid that's in your class has been exposed.
Right.
Kid's potentially been exposed and just made it for everybody. I mean, goodness gracious.
Because there was no other way to do it. I mean,
what they wanted us to do was absolutely insane.
Yeah. And God forbid when a teacher contracted COVID.
Yeah.
After their whole schedule, and, you know, it was just really, 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 really trying.
And then you had those few that would figure out how to play the game, and they would, on the ninth day, go back and get another test. And then 9 days later, they would go back and get another test.
Yeah.
God love them. That was genius. That's all I got to say.
And what was it? You know, when you say new territory, it was absolutely new territory. I mean, it was changing by the minute, and everybody was getting vaccinated, and you had to show that you had gotten vaccinated, show that you had gotten a test. It was really brutal. It was a brutal time.
Can you share a time when a teacher or student made you laugh or surprised you in a way that you didn't expect?
Several, yes. But there was one in particular. There was this kid. He was in my office, and he got into trouble for something. I forgot what it was. And next thing I know, later on in the day, I said, "You know, I haven't seen my cell phone in a little while." So I was thinking back, and I saw the kid, and I believe he got my cell phone. So I called the kid back in my office and sat him down. And this was the next day. And I sat him down and I said, "Listen, man, I need your help." And he said, "Sure, Mr. Hicks." And he was charismatic guy kid. He said, "Sure, Mr. Hicks, anything you need, I got you. I'm going to help you." I said, "Listen, today at lunchtime, the police are coming in the middle of the cafeteria and they're going to arrest the person who stole my cell phone. And I don't want that person to be embarrassed. You've got a lot of friends in this school. Do you think you can find out who got my cell phone? So all I want is to get the cell phone back. That's all I want. I'll call the police and say, look, don't come. I got the cell phone back. I'm not going to get the person in trouble. I don't want to know what the person's name is. Can you help me with that?" And the kid said, "You know, Mr. Hicks, I have talked to some of my friends and I know a lot of people. I think we can get that done. I think I can help you with that. You want me to go do it right now?" And I was like, "Yeah, I do want you to go do it, but not right now. The bell's getting ready to ring in just a second. Just want you to sit here and talk to me for a minute." And I just kept telling him, "Man, I really, really appreciate you, this and that, and this and that, this and that." We were just talking, you know, "How's your mom?" and everything. It was fine. I said, so when you took my cell phone, did you walk around my desk or did you just reach over and grab it?" He said, "No, I just reached over and grabbed it." That's it.
Yeah.
He said, "I'm sorry, Mr. Hicks. I'll bring it back tomorrow." And I said, "Bring me back my cell phone before I suspend the daylights out of you." It was hilarious. It's funny.
How did you motivate your staff and keep morale high during the tough times?
Oh, man, everything. Yeah. We did everything that we possibly could do. Because just like I mentioned, administrators being under a tremendous amount of pressure, teachers were under a tremendous amount of pressure with not only test scores, but dealing with parents, dealing with kids, dealing with, differentiated instruction when you got kids who are really, really high, and then you've got kids in the same classroom that are on a reading on a third grade level. It's just very difficult, and there was a lot of pressure that the district was putting on, you know, the teachers and the kids and the schools and all kind of things. So, one of the things that I did was, number one, over-communicate, and over-communicate effectively. Because if the teachers don't know, or not just teachers, but the community, teachers, students, if they don't know the reason why you're doing something, they'll make it up. Okay. So I try to overly communicate effectively and often about why we were doing things and how I was going to try to attack things. That did a couple of things. Number one, it told the teachers that, okay, he does have a plan. His plan might be ridiculous, but God love him, he's trying. And number two, he's keeping us informed. My dad told me a long time ago when I was a kid, he said, Greg, you're not smart enough to be deceitful, son, so just go ahead and tell the truth. So that's how I try to operate. I just try, and people give you the benefit of the doubt if they see you working hard. If you go out there and you work hard, they're going to come with you. But if they never see you, plus they never hear from you, then you know things are just going to run amok. And that goes with parents as well.
And I noticed it. I didn't have to communicate on every channel. You know, I did have to have a method whereby I did it consistently.
Yes, consistently and effectively. Because if you leave out gaps, if you just communicate and leave big gaps, they'll fill those in too.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they'll make it up.
And another thing that I did, especially during a time where we had a little rough patch as far as discipline is concerned, we had a community meeting, and it was much like an open house PTA type situation. And we were all in the gym, and I had all my teachers come to the middle of the gymnasium floor. And I told everybody in there, parents and everyone, like I said, this is my power team right here. And I said, if they said it, you did it. There would be two questions if a child were sent to the office. Number one, what did the teacher say? And number two, what did you do? Did you do it? Okay. And if they didn't do it, then there was a consequence, period. And a lot of the parents were like, what, you're just going to believe the teachers over anybody? Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And not only did I say that to the parents, but I said that so that all of my teachers could hear it. And then I backed it up, and I would say that on the intercom. I say, if your teacher says it, you did it. Okay. And that did a couple of things. That boosted the morale of the teachers, made them feel supported. And then I followed up with it. But also, I had to finesse that a little bit, because there were some teachers, and I knew that there were some teachers who took that and just ran with it and were not always in the right. And I had to take it upon myself to deal with those teachers individually and make sure that they knew that I was not just going to blindly, you know, represent or support any foolishness. And I think I did that very, very well. And another thing that I did for the students was they couldn't come to me and circumvent the teachers and say, Mr. Hicks, you know, that teacher doesn't like me, or that teacher is this, or that teacher is that. I said, I don't know that. But apparently, if you know that, you have to do whatever you have to do to remain in that teacher's classroom, because that teacher is the one with the power. Okay. Because if the teacher sends you to me, I'm going to support the teacher. Okay, so you have to be, and what that, I know I'm talking long, but what that did was that prevented students from saying to the teacher, well, I'll just talk to Mr. Hicks because you're being unfair, and, you know, they couldn't come back and do it to me. And I would tell the kids, I would say, listen, you versus a teacher, you're going to lose every time. You're going to lose. So stop popping off at the mouth. Stop doing whatever. Your teacher versus your parents. Okay, now you're on a level. Tell your parents. You t- if you know, your mom will come flying up here if we, you know, told you you were against dress code. So you know they'll come flying up in here if they think the teacher is abused, you know, that type of thing. And I had to finesse that a little bit as well because, you know, you didn't want to get out of whack. And you knew the teachers, you know your staff, and you know the teachers that you need to watch and who might take advantage and those who don't. But word got out that, okay, Mr. Hicks is going to support me, but I've got to be right. And I can't just do any old kind of crazy thing.
Yeah, and I had teachers that didn't want to call parents. And I would say over and over again, you know, hey, the first one to mama with the news wins.
That's correct.
And so when they
age.
When they finally figured out that if they would go ahead and call before the end of the day and not let that kid get off the bus or, you know, not let that kid get home to tell that story or even catch them before they got their phone out and be the you know, on your frequent flyers, that went a long way too.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. For sure. And the story would change if the kid got home and told the story before you did.
It didn't matter what really happened. It's the first one to mama with the news won. Mama believed what the first story she heard.
That's correct. And that with talking to the parents, it was imperative to talk to the parents on a consistent basis. Again, that over communicating thing, because I would tell my teachers, you can't have a kid, you know, during progress report time, they have got an A, and then 2 weeks later they have an F because you haven't graded them. And you know, come on, man. You know. So, but yeah,
What's the craziest or most unconventional thing that you ever did to improve your school culture or boost student engagement?
Okay, to answer that question, anything and everything. I've taken a pie in the face. I've worn a dress in just anything and everything. Now, one of the most effective things that we did was that we had a situation where it was to change the school culture. If you did what you were supposed to be doing, okay, on a consistent basis and had fewer than, I don't know how many, disciplinary referrals or write-ups or whatever, the kids that were doing what they were supposed to do, one day out of every month, we would have a day where instead of a pep rally, we would block off that last period of the day or whatever. I would have all the teachers bring in Xboxes, Wii's, any kind of device they had. We set it up in the gym. We got people to donate part, you know, stuff for parties, food, all kind of things. We take them skating. And if you did what you're supposed to do, if you were on that list, then you were invited to come. And if you weren't on that list, you had to stay in class and do whatever. And it was an incentive for those kids who, you know, that are never going to get in trouble. They're always going to do the right thing. And a lot of times those kids don't get overly recognized. I remember when I was a kid, you know, I'll tell my dad, I said, you know, Dad, Johnny down the street got $10 for every A that he got, right?
He said, you may want to consider moving down the street.
Right, exactly. I wanted to show the kids that it's worth something to do what you're supposed to do. Because really, if you look back on it, I look back on my career, 10% of the kids, maybe a little more, about 10-15% of the kids got 90% of my attention because
it's that old RTI pyramid upside down.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, you spent 90% of your time with 10% of your kids.
Yeah.
Easy.
Right.
And it didn't matter which school I was at. Chapman, where discipline was high, Ardmore, where the discipline was low, I still found myself, you know, that percentage, maybe the infractions that they did were a little more serious than one place versus the other, but the amount of time that it took to discipline them was about the same. on that RTI pyramid upside down.
Yeah. It was like that old adage when you go to the ballpark and you meet parents and you say, my child is so-and-so and so-and-so. And you say, well, I don't think I know him. And they're like, great. That's fantastic.
Yeah. So you talked to me a little bit earlier in the interview about balance. So how did you balance the needs of students, teachers, and parents, and then still manage those district expectations? Because there's a lot to that.
Yeah. The best way to do that is to empower your people. And the reason I say that is because I couldn't be everywhere. And when you have people who can do certain things and do them well, trust them and let them do it. Because when I would, if I were involved too much in, let's say, discipline or trying to be everywhere and different things, something is going to be left by the wayside. And you have some people on your staff who are outstanding communicators and really, really good with the community, really, really good with the kids. Showcase those people, spread the wealth around. And that way you can kind of keep track of everything, keep your hands on all of these different type of things without losing it and things getting out of balance. But in order to do that, you've got to meet constantly and you've got to make sure you've got your finger on the pulse of the school, because if you don't, people will come to, because everything is your fault. Even if everything that goes horribly wrong is your fault. Even if you don't know that it's going on, that's your fault. You shouldn't do that.
That's right. You should have. What do we pay you for? What do we pay you for?
Exactly.
I pay your salary.
Oh, my goodness. And I'm thinking, well, you're not paying enough.
There you go. Could I bother you for a raise?
Yeah.
Is there a specific student or teacher success story that reminded you why you became an administrator? This is where you get to tell, that you taught Taylor Swift how to sing.
Yeah, no, I can't go there. But I can tell you this. There's been a number of times that I've been walking somewhere with my wife and there would be some scary people approaching us and I wouldn't say. I would say, who is that? And I would look back and I'd say, Damien, how you doing? tattoos, everyone, all this kind of thing. Okay, man, how you doing? And my wife be like, you know him? I said, yeah. Coach, I've got about 5 kids now, and I'm working at so-and-so-and-so. I really appreciate what you did to me did for me and that type of thing. And, man, that's a beautiful thing. Now, the most memorable and I guess the one that touches my heart so much is that at Huntsville Junior High School, when I was that was my last place I was before I retired. I had a lot of, and when I say a lot, I mean at least 25 what I call grand students, because I had taught their parents. I'd either taught their parents, coached their parents, that type of thing. And one of the kids, he was just unruly, is not even the word that I could give. And it was just, oh man. And I came up to him and I was talking to him and he had an attitude. And I said, is your dad's name so and so? And he said, yeah. I want you to go home and tell your dad that Coach Hicks is your principal. Next day, he comes back. I said, hey, did you talk to your dad? Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. And I started talking. I said, that's interesting. And I said, what did he say to you? And he said, well, he said this, that, and I better do this and I better do that. And then he said, and my dad told me that I could trust you. And that really just kind of crumbled my heart and melted my heart. And I said, that's exactly what I want. That's exactly what my career is all about, or I wanted it to be about. And then word got out to all the other kids, and that kind of calmed everything down. Because before that time, I think that's when I first got there. Things were kind of, you know, not where they should.
Yeah, they trying you. I mean, they, you know.
Right.
Seeing what they can get away with.
Yes.
What's the funniest misunderstanding or miscommunication that you had while managing the school?
Once again, there were several. I consider myself to be a big picture guy. Okay. Details, not so much. I had this great idea that we were going to have this carnival or something, you know, something we're going to do. And I got on the intercom and I said, okay, everybody, what we're going to do is we're all going to go out to the gym and we're going to have a good time and we're all going to go right now. And then it was chaos, pandemonium, and everybody just, you know, rushing out. And I was like, maybe I should have thought about that a little bit more. And then, of course, then come the phone calls to the office, and they are my, you know, you always have those teachers who are very, very, you know, okay, this.
Yeah, no. Detail-oriented.
Yes, absolutely. So I knew that, because other than that, you know, before that time, when I said, okay, we're all going to do this, and everybody was just a free-for-all, and the hallways went crazy, I knew then that I needed these people. I talked to you before about getting your people who can do certain things. I always ran my ideas by this group or this committee of teachers before I did anything. And that always kept me out of trouble like that. I remember that I never wanted that to happen again, because I got in a faculty meeting the next day and said, well, it was a good idea.
It sounded good at the time.
My heart was that's like, we know, Mr. But, you know, just kind of use it. And we got to, you know, we all laughed about it. They realized that they needed to help me with that. I said, hey, I'm great at certain things, but help me with it. And that's another thing that I always like to do, just be real with your faculty. They already know that I'm the boss, so I don't have to go around slinging my weight around. Because if you have to go around and sling your weight around, then you're really not in charge. So just be real with them and tell them, say, hey, I can do this well, but I want this to happen. Who can help me do this, that, and the other? And they usually give you the benefit of the doubt and let you do it.
So if administration were a superhero job, what would you say your superpower is or was, and then how did you use it to improve the school?
I would say mind reading. You've got to know what everybody is thinking or what everybody is going to think. And that goes back to having your thumb on the pulse of the school and the community and everything that's going on. So you have to have a little forethought and know what people are going to say or how people are going to feel about what you said or what you want them to do. Like I said before, being the big picture kind of guy, I learned then that, hey, I need to stop and really think about some of these things. So when I talk to people, I kind of read their body language and see what they feel about it and just kind of put little feelers out. And I had to do that a lot. Like I said, over-communication and effective communication is absolutely key. Nonverbal type of things and just know what's going on. Know what's going to happen before you really get into it.
Well, all right. It's time now for the my favorite part of the podcast. I call it story time. And this is where you get to tell any story or stories from your career where, you know, that don't fit into the, didn't fit into the interview anywhere? I don't know that I know any on you, but I don't remember if you were in the room or not when at that PD, and I can't even remember what the PD was about, but the lights went out right in the middle of it, and I said, oh, my God, I went blind. You know, down there in the basement and the merch center, was, there was no light coming in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was brutal down there. But what I remember now, is a professional development where a one Mr. Glenn Bryant sat there, and I could have sworn it was Billy Graham reincarnated.
No, Billy Graham ain't never got the spirit like that.
We were talking about, I think we were talking about the devil.
The devil, you take the D off of devil and you have evil. I tell you, the devil is evil. You take the E off of evil and you have vile. I tell you, the devil is vile. You take the V off of vile and you have eel. The devil wants to make you eel. You take the I off of eel and you have ale. The devil wants you to go to ale, flock, straight to ale. That one?
That is exactly the...
Lord.
I have never had so much fun in a professional development in my life when you did that. And I was like, okay, this is going to be something right here.
Yeah. Well, you know, some of that, I mean, I did appreciate working in Huntsville City because they did invest a lot in PD. I mean, I don't know if they went overboard, but they went into a lot. And one of the things I talk about in some of my other stuff is support and how support looks like, what support looks like. And I use the analogy of an apple tree. In order for you to pick the apples at the top of the tree, you've got to have a ladder. But if you set that ladder in the middle of the row between the trees, you can't get to any of the apples. And that's what school districts do a lot of times is they set the support where, you know, this is the support we're going to provide. This is where we're going to put it. But it's not anywhere near where it needs to be in order for it to be effective. And I thought Huntsville City did a pretty good job of providing us the support. And I realized too that I'm like you, I'm a 30,000 feet guy. You know, I try to see the big picture. I realized too that it was an almost impossible task because the needs from one school to the next in that district were, the distance. They had the lowest achieving school in the state of Alabama and the highest achieving school in the state of Alabama in the same district.
Yeah.
I mean, my goodness, what a gap.
Light years apart.
Yeah. And so how do you provide support, ongoing PD for administrators in that environment? And, I kind of liked the district's, I guess, like, for lack of a better word, their process. We're going to provide high quality PD, and it's like special ed strategies. Hey, they work for everybody. And so they just, we're going to give you good high leverage leadership techniques, and then you apply them how you need to apply them. I always thought that was a great approach.
Yeah, I did too. And
any other stories that you want to share?
Not that I can think of right now. There's tremendous amount.
Well, I do appreciate you joining us today, but I do thank you again for being here.
Absolutely.
And I can't say enough how much I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to provide some leadership and guidance and some of your experience to our website. I mean, our podcast.
Anything I can do to help, Glenn. Anything I can do to help. Loved it.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Teacher Tales. If you are inspired, motivated, or just had a good laugh, be sure to subscribe and share this podcast with your friends. And if you know a good teacher who has a story to tell, I'd love to hear from them. Send me an email at motivatedinspiration@gmail.com with your suggestion. Remember, Whether you're in the classroom, at home, or out in the world, keep spreading the joy of learning. Until next time, keep those stories alive.